to his 10-year-old sister Bernice when he was born, and then she went off to help somebody else have a baby. I guess by the time you have 8 children, you don't need as much time to recover. But that was the way things were back then. Reggie lost his mama when he was about 6 years old. And then he lost his daddy the year he graduated. So things changed for Reggie in a hurry. I think he was used to work, or at least as used to work as the youngest of 8 can be. But all at one time, he graduated, he had no parents, and he had no home. And so he had to get to work, and so he did the most obvious thing that you could do, and that was to get married. So it would really be more challenging. But he met Connie at the restaurant, one of the restaurants here in town, and he was enamored. And apparently, he flustered Connie because he ordered a Dr. Pepper, and she brought him an Orange Crush. And the kids said that he had had a crush on her ever since. And I know that's true, just watching the way they were around each other and treated each other. Reggie is one of the workingest men I think I've ever been around. He worked at just about everything. He was a farmer. I know he helped out with ranching. He owned a gas station for a while. And then the guy across the street who had a car dealership came and said, "You don't need to be running a gas station. You need to come to work for me." And it was the perfect fit because Reggie loved cars. They said he was one of the hot rodders around town, whatever that was, when he was a young man, and he knew everything there was to know about cars. And I believe that's true. And I think he loved every car he ever owned. I can remember buying a car from him, and he would tell me how sad he was he gave it up. And so what I did, what Carolyn and I did, my wife, we took all the goodie out of that car, and when he asked to buy it back, we said, "Why, sure." And he was disappointed that he had bought that car back because he loved cars, and he was sad the way we had treated it. He and Connie had 3 daughters and 2 sons, 14 grandkids, and about 1 million great-grandkids. And I was thinking how many of the grandkids I have run into through the years, and what a sweet family they are. It just kept on going down. One of the daughters said that her aunt Bernice, who is the one who is more responsible for raising Reggie than anyone, so if you want to blame anybody, it was her aunt Bernice. But she used to say, "You have the most beautiful family I've ever seen." And I thought about that because Carolyn, my wife, used to say, "You have the most beautiful family I've ever seen." And of course, she meant after our family. but they're just a fine group of people. And Reggie loved every one of them. Maybe not always at the start for the in-laws, though. I was talking to Johnny. Johnny married Diane. I think most of y'all know Johnny, but he came down from Borger, and I think as far as Reggie was concerned, he was just a playboy. But he came down to court his daughter, and he was not invited into the home to stay overnight, so he would spend the night out in his car. Well, one time he came in on a bus, and he thought, well, this'll do it, but it didn't do it. Reggie sent him home on a bus in a blizzard. It was so bad that Johnny was standing out on the highway and the bus didn't even see him as it whizzed by, so Johnny had to go back and talk to him again. But that changed. It really did. As a matter of fact, it has not been too long since Reggie took me aside and he said, "You know, I've got a pretty good son-in-law." He wasn't talking about Johnny. Actually, he was. We were talking about Johnny at the time. But he loved his in-laws. Each one of y'all It just you made his life so much better by treating his children who he loved, and by treating his grandchildren, those of whom are married, whom he loved, with such honor and respect. And I'm here to tell you, if any of that changes, he'll come back. And so you be good to your spouses, because he loved them that much. Speaking of the grandchildren, Hannah was telling me that he always wanted to make sure she had a bike. And she said it didn't matter that she had bikes. He would always get her another bike. He'd get one at a garage sale or just wherever he could pick one up, even if it came from a dumpster. And she said, and it did come from a dumpster one time. But he got it fixed up and took care of it and made sure that his granddaughter, no doubt granddaughters, had bikes to ride. Lisa and Diane were talking last night about his patience. He taught all the kids how to drive. Some of you sons may remember differently, but they were just talking about how patient he was. Taught him how to drive everything, from a stick shift to a tractor. I think one of them even drove the honey wagon. For those of you who are not familiar with honey wagons, you can ask Connie about it afterwards. But I do remember after I moved here, we got stuck in a blizzard. I'd never gotten stuck in the snow before. I'd lived in Wyoming 20 years. I got stuck here. And Reggie was the one who came and pulled me out. It was in a blizzard, by the way, Johnny. And I don't know that I'd ever smelled anything sweeter than that honey wagon when he came and got me. Darren was talking about how his dad always wanted him to have whatever he needed for whatever project there was. And he said, I've got that whole shop out there. You just go get what you need. And then he said, and then he would hound me from that point on, asking me, when are you going to return my tools? And so that was Reggie. I was visiting with Monty for a little bit, and Monty shared something with his dad. He was in the Navy for 6 years. I don't think his dad was in the Navy quite that long, but he said they were just talking about that the other day. One of the things I loved about Reggie, he went through cancer. He'd had a heart attack, heart surgery, and yet he was always happy. I got to see him just a couple of weeks ago in the hospital, and I walked in with two other guys, and he was happy to see us, and he was happy to see us leave, I think, because he was tired. But instead of you're going and encouraging him, he would encourage you and make sure that you were in a good mood before you left. He was unusual in that. He got to fly to Hawaii with one of his daughters and an acquaintance, her husband. I think that was when the conversation came up about what a fine son-in-law he had. But they got front row seats so that when they were able to deboard, they could get off first. But Reggie didn't want to leave in front of the other people, and so they sat on that front seat while the entire plane deboarded so that he could make sure they were taken care of first. Now, that's a pretty remarkable man. As far as that consideration goes, I guess he was just shy of his 70th birthday, late 60s anyway, and there was a gentleman over there working on his driveway. And Reggie started feeling bad. He started feeling chest pains, but he wanted to make sure that the man was taken care of before he left. And so he waited for him to finish working on the driveway, and then he got him his check before he left. And then he drove himself down to the fire station, gave him his diagnosis, I'm having a heart attack, so they wouldn't have to do that themselves, and they put him on an ambulance, and sure enough, he'd had a heart attack. I can remember getting a call and going up, and Carrie, I think, was the one that was there, and Connie was stranded at Pantex because she was carpooling, and I guess her carpooler couldn't get off as readily as she could at that moment, and so I can remember the doctor coming in and showing us the picture of his heart in all these clogged arteries, including one that was starting to make its own bypass. And I just thought, here he is, he's in that kind of shape, he's having a heart attack, and he waits to make sure he can pay somebody before he goes to drive himself to an ambulance to get to the hospital. That was a different era that Reggie came from. And yet it was one that, if we're attentive, we're going to learn something about. Clearly, I could talk about Reggie for a long, long time, but it wouldn't be appropriate to do so. But let me maybe conclude this portion of the service with this. Reggie was one of the kindest men I ever knew. From the moment I met him until the last time I got to see him, he was just kind. And I suspect that if there was ever anyone who could meet that definition of a man without guile, other than maybe Nathaniel, it was Reggie. He was a pleasant man. He loved his family. And he expects to see you in heaven someday. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
Going to have two more songs. The next song is going to be number 319. I Know Who Holds Tomorrow, number 319.
I don't know about tomorrow. I just live from day to day. I don't borrow from its sunshine, for its skies may turn to gray. I don't worry o'er the future, for I know what Jesus said. And today I'll walk beside him, for he knows what is ahead. Many things about tomorrow I don't seem to understand, but I know who holds tomorrow, and I know who holds my hand. Every step is getting brighter as the golden stairs I climb. Every burden's getting lighter, every cloud is silver line. There the sun is always shining, there no tear will dim the eye. At the ending of the rainbow, where the mountains touch the sky, many things about tomorrow I don't seem to understand, but I know who holds tomorrow, and I know who holds my hand. I don't know about tomorrow, it may bring me poverty, but the one who feeds the sparrow is the one who stands by me. And the path that be my portion may be through the flame or flood, but his presence goes before me, and I'm covered with his blood. Many things about tomorrow I don't seem to understand, but I know who holds tomorrow, and I
last song is going to be number 50. Amazing Grace, number 50.
No, amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. How precious did that grace appear, the hour I first believed. Through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. 'Tis grace hath brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home. When we've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, we've no less days to sing God's praise than when we first begun.
One of the things I have thought about through the years, a lot about through the years, whenever I have the privilege of doing a memorial service, is this. The ones who are there are the ones who loved the one that we come to honor the most. And they are the ones that they loved the most. And so I think there are some sobering thoughts and yet some very hopeful thoughts that are worthy of looking at. Not from a perspective of what a preacher would want people to hear. You can come on just about any Sunday and hear that. But from the perspective of what the one whom we come to honor and remember would want. And that's hard because we don't get to talk to him afterwards. But we do have some glimpses. And it's that I wanted to talk about for a moment, because I really feel like Reggie would want these things said. Solomon said, "It's better to go to a house of mourning than a house of feasting, for death is the destiny of every man, and the living should take this to heart." When I moved to Happy, Reggie was about the age I am now. And I don't know if I'm going to make it to 90. I don't think at that time Reggie thought he would make it to 90, and yet he was just about a month shy. It's just amazing how quickly life goes. And it's a good life is the thing. So often when we gather, we rightfully mourn. What kind of a relationship would it have been if we don't mourn? It's a precious relationship. And this part of it has ceased. But God could not possibly have just created us for this life. If there's eternity, and he says there is. And since there's eternity, then eternity being more than the physical life, It must be more important. As a matter of fact, it must be what we were created for in the first place. And so when you think about it, this life's just a test. You want to serve God? You want to serve Him on His terms? Or do you want to go your own way? The beauty is, if we will serve God on His terms, even though we make mistake after mistake, if we come back to Him on those terms, the terms of the One who loved us so much that He gave His Son to die for us, then His promise to us is we get to be with Him forever. We're cautioned about not judging one another. We're very careful never to put anybody in hell, and rightfully so, but so often we're really quick to put somebody in heaven. And that's God's place. And so I don't want you to think that I'm trying to put Reggie into heaven. What I do want you to know is this. Reggie was in Christ, and Reggie had a hope of heaven, and that hope is not a wish. It's not weak. That hope is a longing expectation. And so, if Reggie's life was what it appeared to be, and only God knows this, but we have a pretty fair idea, then Reggie is with God for all eternity. Again, God's final decision, but He's on our side. Now, since that's the case, since we believe that, I believe most of us do, then what does that say about us? And the answer is there's going to be a reunion someday, a reunion of the faithful. There's a reunion of the unfaithful, but we don't even want to think about that, do we? And that's not what we're talking about today, because Reggie was a faithful man. We would, the last, oh, I don't know, 3 or 4 months of his life, he was no longer able to get up and get around. And so he requested that on Sundays we bring the communion to him. And just about every time we did that, Reggie would offer one of the prayers. I don't know that I've ever heard a more beautiful prayer. It was a prayer of a man who loved his Father, who appreciated what Christ had done for him, who recognized that he was not worthy, but who was appreciative all the same. It was one of the most simple, uncomplicated, beautiful prayers of a man of faith. And so here is what I think Reggie would want you to know. And the odd thing is, it comes from a man who was not faithful and who was not good. We know the story. It's found in Luke 16, and it's about the rich man and Lazarus. And Jesus tells this not as a parable, but apparently as something that happened. He's telling about a historical event. And he talks about a rich man who just lived in luxury every day, and then a poor man who sat outside the rich man's gate just wishing he could eat from the crumbs of his table. It said the dogs would come and lick his sores. He had a hard life. But it said when they died, Lazarus was taken up to paradise, and the rich man was taken to torment. Apparently, these are the waiting places for heaven and hell. And it shouldn't surprise us. We're told there's going to be a new heaven. But as the rich man who was lost was looking across the chasm, he could see Lazarus. And he begged Abraham, whom he could also see, to send Lazarus just to dip a finger in water and touch it to his tongue. That was how miserable he was. For him, that would be relief, to just get a drop of water. And Abraham reminded him, you had your good things. And besides, there's a chasm fixed. Even if somebody from here wanted to cross over, they couldn't. And this is the part that I think each one of us need to take to heart, because the rich man then said this. He said, then please, I beg you, send Lazarus to my father's household, for I have 5 brothers. Let him warn them so that they don't end up in this place. And then Abraham said, they have Moses and the prophets. And then Jesus, who is about to die and come back from the dead, said this. Quoted Abraham as saying this: if they won't listen to Abraham and the prophets, they won't listen even if one from the dead comes back and talks to them. So, this message will depend highly upon the state of your heart. if there is a warning from an evil man that essentially says, you got to take this seriously. Life is short. And then we go on to the real existence. And the real existence is really bad for those who don't want to serve God now, but is really good for those who do. What do you think a good man like Reggie would want us to know? Don't you think he'd want you to know the same thing? Don't you think 3 daughters and 2 sons and 14 grandchildren and all the in-laws and millions of great-grandchildren? Don't you think that he would want you to know the same thing? It's real. Don't miss it. Don't miss the reunion. We all get caught up in life. That's what we live in. We get caught up in the world. That's where we live. But we have to take thought for the future, because we are here, put on earth, to serve God. And if we decide to do it the way He's asked us to, though we mess up, if we come back, we get to serve Him forever. And it's beautiful. It will not only be with those we love. 70 and a half years isn't nearly long enough, is it? It'll be with God and with Christ. It'll be with every faithful person that's ever lived. And there will be no mourning, there will be no tears, there will be no death. I can't wait. Well, there are some parts of me that say I can wait. But you know what I mean. And I do look forward to being with those who are faithful, who've gone on before. And it makes me all the more determined to take my failures and turn them around, so that because of God's grace, I can be there. And that, I believe, is the message that Reggie would want y'all to have today. Get serious. Enjoy life. He loved life. If ever there was a man that loved life, it was Reggie. But he was also serious about his faith. So serious that when it came towards the end, when he could no longer worship, his request was, will you bring communion to me so I can take part in that on the first day of every week? He wanted to serve God with whatever capacity he had until the very end. And I believe he did. I guess it was 2 weeks prior to his passing, he was in the hospital at BSA, and I went up to visit him. One of the neat things about a preacher's visit is they're either happy to see when you come or they're happy to see when you go. Either way, you've made people happy. And so, as I was about to go, Reggie was talking about he wanted to talk to Connie, but he couldn't get that stupid phone to work. And so I agreed with him about stupid phones, but I had brought my stupid phone with me. And so I asked him if he would like me to call Connie on my phone. And he said, yes, he sure would. And so I dialed up and got a hold of Connie and put the phone on speakerphone so that he could just sit there. He was under the covers and he could talk to her. And it was like watching probably what he was like 70 and a half years ago, talking to his crush. And he just talked about nothing for, I don't know, 10 minutes. Finally, so much so that Connie said, well, probably ought to let Rick go. And then I heard a man from an era that doesn't say this enough, how much he loved his wife. Always remember that about Reggie and Connie, who said it right back about her husband. This is a good life. Enjoy it to the very end with the people that you love, but always keep God first. And if you've made a mistake on that already, well then, welcome to the club. But what will you do about it to make sure that you don't miss that great reunion? And I can tell you from experience, the Johnsons have great reunions. Because I've heard about them. As far as the grief, Jesus said this, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart. You'll find rest for your souls. Isaiah said, the righteous perish and no one ponders it in his heart. Devout men are taken away and no one understands. that the righteous are taken away to be spared from evil. And then he says this, those who walk uprightly enter into peace, and they find rest as they lie in death. Been given a great gift. Let's make sure that we take advantage of it. And as far as Reggie, what a privilege to have known such a man. And as far as each one of you who are here to encourage the family, thank you on their behalf for being here. I don't know that you can ever know how much that means until you go through it. And I know so many of you have, and that's why you're here. Would you bow with me as we close out this service? Holy Father, we're so thankful for the blessings of life. We're thankful for your plan of salvation. We know we don't deserve it, but Father, we certainly look forward to it. We thank you for this good life. We thank you for the laughter you give to us. We thank you for the joy you give to us. We thank you for the comfort that we receive from you. Father, please comfort each one that's mourning today. Please help their mourning to turn back to joy at the prospect of being able to be reunited someday with Reggie and with you and with Christ. Father, please help us all to have a renewed determination to make sure that we don't miss that grand reunion. We thank you for your plan. We thank you for allowing us to have Reggie in our lives for this period of time. We especially thank you for your son. It's in his name we pray.